The Farm in the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for. The nitrogen that stays put, weather or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com. Welcome to Farm in the Countryside. I'm Andrew McCray. The last quarter of 2020 saw a significant price gain for grains. The situation provides opportunities for producers to make profitable sales and lock in prices for the long term. So exactly when should you be selling and how much? What should your plan be for the 2021 crop that is still a few months from being planted? It's our topic for this week's Farm in the Countryside, brought to you by Pivot BioProven. It's time to rethink nitrogen. Pivot BioProven replaces nitrogen fertilizer with microbes that adhere to the crop's root system and apply nitrogen each day. Performance report data shows Pivot BioProven consistently outperforms synthetic nitrogen fertilizer year over year, providing corn growers improved yields and a more dependable nitrogen supply that isn't lost to the environment. To read the performance report, go to pivotbio.com. And for more information on Pivot BioProven, text PROVEN to 31313. It goes without saying, it's been quite a year. As we enter 2021, we find opportunities for many grain producers as prices for corn and beans have rallied in the last few months. If you're a corn and soybean grower like myself, you may be asking, when should I sell my current crop and how much of my 2021 production should I consider marketing? And if I decide to market that grain, how should I do it? Cash contracts? Take a position on the board of trade? Purchase call options? There are lots of ways and combinations of ideas one could use. Chip Flory is a regular guest on this podcast, and the theme of my interview was basically this. If prices right now are profitable for grain producers, how do they best take advantage of that situation to ensure profits without leaving a lot of potential income on the table? And how do I make sure I don't squander this opportunity? I think you'll enjoy our conversation. Chip Flory is my guest, a regular guest here on the podcast, as well as you, of course, hear him on AgriTalk all the time. Chip, how's everything going where you're at up in Iowa right now?
Well, we're doing pretty good. Actually, right now, at this moment, we're waiting for the first big snowstorm of the year in the Waterloo area. So I guess that's where my anticipation is centered right now. But, Andrew, I've also got to tell you, and everybody else that's listening, I've got a daughter that's in her 39th week and a daughter-in-law that's in her 38th week. So I've got babies on the mind, too.
Well, we'll hope the weather is good when it's delivery time to get
That's right.
Well, hey, we're going to look ahead at 2021 marketing our current crop and the crop we haven't even put in the ground. But here's where I thought we would start. I want to go back to March and April timeframe.
Yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being that farmers just thought things were great, the economy was perfect, that this is going to be a great year. When you go back to March and April, where do you think on a scale of 1 to 10 our attitudes were at that time when you think back to that time after COVID was hitting and the lockdowns were starting?
2. It was terrible. The attitude was about as bad as I can remember. No question about it.
So now as we go into 2021, on the same scale, where are we at?
Maybe even an 8. I was going to say 7, but maybe even an 8 on the optimism side of things.
Yeah, no.
You know, it's been one of the most dramatic, unexpected turnarounds in farm income potential that I've seen.
I know. And that was what I've been thinking about as I reflect on this year and heading into 2021, what a dramatic turnaround it has been. And, you know, we can sit here and look at crop prices, but normally to have a jump like this, you think, oh, major drought, something like right. that. But as you reflect on 2020, how have we gotten from the 2 up to the 8? What has wow. happened? What has propelled it in your mind to change it so much?
Well, the bad attitudes, the low level of expectations that we had early in the year was kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy in many ways. I mean, we were being told on a regular basis that there's no way that this guy in the White House is going to negotiate any kind of a trade deal. And it doesn't matter if he says that a trade deal has been signed or not. We don't have any proof that it's actually happened. So they just kept talking it down, talking it down, talking it down. And all of a sudden, we get to the end of the year, and the Phase One trade agreement is the event of the year in Pro Farmer Newsletter. And I'm not saying that the only reason that China is buying is because they signed some piece of paper or they shook some hand, like Bob Lighthizer's hand, and said, okay, we're going to do this. That's not why they're buying. They're buying because they need it. They wouldn't buy if they didn't need it. But that Phase One and the agreement was so much more than the purchase agreement. There's 57 different items in it, and they've made progress on 52 of those items now. A lot of it has to do with the intellectual property. A lot of it has to do with the ownership of those companies. And we are making progress on it. And it was built up to be such a failure that it had everybody down. And the fact that it's not a failure, and that there is some promise and some hope emanating from this trade agreement and trade with China, I think it took everybody by surprise. You mentioned that with a buck and a half rally in corn and a $4 rally in soybeans, it sure sounds like or feels like that it's a market that's driven by tight supplies. Now, our yields weren't as good as what many thought they were going to be early in the year, but that the supply side issues are being covered up inside of China. I don't think there's any question about that. That their crop, their corn crop in particular, Andrew, is probably 30 million tons, maybe even 35 million tons below what they are advertising or estimating right now, and it's turning into corn purchases and purchases of U.S. corn. And again, it just took everybody by surprise, man.
It did. Well, and I want to go back to something you said where you said they're buying, of course, because they need it. So does that mean even with a change of administrations, do we continue to see the buying because underlying China needs this grain?
Yeah, I think we do. I think we do continue to see the buying, and I think in many cases it accelerates. The writing is on the wall for the 2020-21 marketing year, the current marketing year, that they're going to buy somewhere in the range of 20 million metric tons of U.S. corn. When we get into the 2021-22 marketing year, if we have the supplies, some of the best minds in the business, Andrew, are telling me that China is going to be in for somewhere between 35 and 50 million metric tons of U.S. corn. That's a huge number. That is a number that nobody anticipated 18 months ago. It's a number that very few thought was possible 2 months ago. And now it's starting to generate the level of understanding of just what exactly the needs are in China for the feed. It's becoming better understood throughout the marketplace. It hasn't all been factored in yet, I don't think, but it's becoming better understood.
Every once in a great while, we have a market like this where those that sold early, let's say back earlier this year, now are looking at that and saying, man, I hope I didn't sell everything I can make so much more now. So is there a concern that all of us that, you know, live this lesson every once in a while now say, Why market it? This goes to prove I shouldn't have puts, calls. I shouldn't be hedging. It went up and I missed the rally if I sold early. Is there a danger in us thinking that because of the way these markets have gone this year?
Dude, you are reading my mind because that is the topic of my column in Farm Journal, in the January edition of Farm Journal. No. You see, and the other thing is if you did sell, many have got a bad attitude towards those that didn't. And they say things like, well, you know, if you didn't make any sales early, you just got bailed out by the Chinese buying. There's no bailout. Did you not think that there was the potential of Chinese buying? Of course you did. It's risk management. that's all that we're talking about here. That's why if the lesson that I am that I guess I relearned in 2020 is to maintain the flexibility in your marketing. Basis all year long, Andrew was screaming that either the supplies weren't there or the demand was going to be bigger than anybody anticipated. Even when we went through the demand destruction, you look at the basis charts and the demand destruction on the ethanol side of things. You look at the basis charts, basis reflected that, but it reflected it for a very short period of time, and then the basis snapped right back and was trading above the three-year average. When that happened, Andrew, that's one of those things that makes you sit back in your chair. You got to pay attention to it and try to figure out what it's telling you. And I am not going to, you know, sit here and say, I saw this buck and a half rally coming in corn, Andrew. I'm not saying that. But the strength in basis and the way that it came back from that initial demand destruction that we saw in late March and April, the way that the basis recovered so quickly was a warning sign to everybody that something like what we have gone through could happen. I did not anticipate a buck and a half. There's no way that I will say that. Or $4 in beans. But it was enough to convince me that you needed to maintain flexibility and you needed to maintain potential in the market. Basis trading strong, go ahead and capture the basis. Use a cash sale, capture that basis, but reopen your upside potential with either long futures position or call option, one of the two. It just drove that point home, that flexibility and the importance of it in your marketing.
Well, you're leading me where I wanted to go. I wanted to kind of use the back half of our conversation here. Obviously, you know, folks have probably some grain in the bin, so they're going to keep selling that. But as you look ahead to 2021 and the crop we will be planting here in a few months, how should I begin to start thinking about my marketing year? In your mind, where does it start? I mean, obviously, you know, I can look right here at my bulletin board. I've got my costs laid out, so I have a pretty good idea of how much it's going to cost to put the corn and soybeans in the ground and so forth. Walk me through your process of what I should be thinking about before I start selling some of that crop I've not yet planted.
Yeah. Well, you've done the first things that you need to do, and that is understanding your costs. And another thing that 2020, I should say that was reinforced in my mind in 2020, Andrew, was how wide of a range there is on costs of production out there. And I'm just talking primarily about corn, because when you go back to that March, April timeframe, when everything really, really looked tough out there, the guys that are working with the lowest costs of production at that time, you could find, it was easy to spot them. It was easy to spot them because they had a smile on their face because they knew that 2020 was going to be a year of opportunity for them because they were going to make money and it was going to give them an opportunity to expand their operations. Now, that's kind of that's a tough love way of looking at some things, but I think it's accurate because they anticipated growing their business in 2020. Those with the highest cost of production were obviously at risk. So understanding what your cost of production is, first and foremost, you've got that nailed. You need to understand that on a farm level and in many cases on a field level, but at least on a farm level, you've got to have that understood. And that gives you a guideline on maybe not getting started on your marketing, but it tells you when you should be accelerating your marketing. I mean, if you're willing to sell some corn at break even, go ahead and do that. But if you're looking at a 5% return, you should be even more willing to sell more corn. A 7.5% return, more willing to sell more corn. 10% return, again, more willing to sell more corn. So you just keep pushing the accelerator down on how much you are selling as you get that bigger and bigger return. So if at 4.25 in a solid new crop basis, you're looking at a 10% return, I'm not going to tell anybody to not sell corn. I will ask you to also make an investment in the idea that this market is going to continue to go up and re-own it with a call option. So use a minimum price contract, construct a minimum price contract on your own. That might be a better way of doing it. It'd save you a couple of pennies. But construct that minimum price contract that captures the price, captures the return, and maintains some upside potential on the price side of things going forward. I think that's the way to go. It just provides too much flexibility to not use it, Andrew. That's kind of how I'm looking at it.
Sure. Well, and you know, everybody listening to this is maybe in a different location, but I can look at right now Kansas City price, December corn for next year for 2021. You know, you can get 4.25 right now, and you can get right at 10.50 for beans next year. Do you have a strategy then that I sell a certain percentage of my crop each month, each week? Look at what the price does, because for a lot of folks, those prices, I'm going to say they're probably profitable, hopefully getting close to profitable if they aren't at those prices.
Yeah, I would suggest that they're probably profitable. And in many cases, we are looking at a 10% return. And I don't know why I wouldn't let that get away from you. People have been saying, you know, at least get started, but don't get crazy on their sales. If you're looking at a 10% return, why not get crazy? And take some of that 10% and reinvest it on onto the long side of the market with a call option. I wouldn't let it get away from me. I guess there's a couple of things in my mind. The memory of losing money for too many producers is still too fresh. You only got to go back 8-9 months, and there were a majority of producers staring big time losses right in the face, and now we're not. So that can change. The other thing is, I've got to measure the vulnerabilities in the marketplace right now. Everybody's kind of jacked up on the idea that these vaccines are going to be fantastic and it's going to get us back to get our lives back to normal. I'm with that. I tend to lean that way in my thinking, Andrew. But what if we're all wrong? What if it doesn't happen that way? What if this variant that is in Europe takes us back to step one? I don't think that's the case. But what if we do get some bad news piled on top of bad year? That's the kind of black swan events that nobody anticipated COVID. There were warnings out there, and everybody said, listen, this could happen, and when it does, the world isn't going to know how to react to it. Well, we figured out how to react to it. What if we get a year later, and we have to do a, oh, no, we're back at step one on this thing? That is going to be really tough for the equity markets to handle. It's going to be really tough for the commodity markets to handle. And obviously, I am hoping that nothing like that happens. But why would you let a 10% return get away from you when you can still add on to that with the flexibility that's offered by a call or a futures position? And I know it sounds like I'm trying to sell brokerage here, Andrew. I get that. But I'm not. The flexibility that is offered by that call option right now, going into 2021 crop season, it is too valuable to not use.
Well, and you certainly hear that strategy a lot, and I agree with the call options. Do you look at call options then that are, you know, close to that 425 price for corn, or are you looking on up something that's out of the money a ways just to give you protection in a runaway market? Or I suppose that may depend on the producer and what risks they want to have.
Yeah, I think I'd be willing to go a little bit out of the money, but I'm not going to get too crazy with it. 20 cents, maybe 30 cents out of the market with a call option purchase, or stay right at the that 430 level, and maybe look out. And if there, and I'll admit, I haven't even looked to see if there's much opportunity offered in this, but maybe you could sell a 480. Against it, you know, 50 cents above it. Yeah, if the market does go to 480 and the DEES 21 does go to 480, you're not going to benefit after that. But hey, you could sell the 480 against it, cheapen up your purchase for the 430, and that spread would, like I said, it would cheapen up your entry on it. You wouldn't be able to participate in any of the price action above 480, but you would participate in the action up to 480.
Right, right. Do you think that the discussion around crop insurance changes this year because of where we are at on prices? Is this the year to move up your coverage, or does that change at all what you've been doing in the past, do you think, for a lot of folks?
Yeah, we got to hold on to what we've got as we get into February and into the end of February. But I think this is one of those years with the amount of uncertainty that we've got, Andrew, that, get it back to business insurance rather than revenue insurance. It's going to be one of those years that you maximize your coverage.
So, you know, this year, obviously, we had so many things that we didn't expect when we started the year that happened. So as we head into 2021, I suppose you never know what are going to happen in world events. The markets could continue to run up. Give me the scenario, though, that the markets begin to fall back, because it looks like that there's going to continue to be need in China. It doesn't look like South America is going to have a bumper crop at this point. Right. So all those signs are pointing one way, but that's usually a dangerous place to get, because that's when it sneaks up on you. So what's the scenario that pay prices begin to erode?
Boy, that's a great way of looking at it, Andrew, and it's an important conversation that I think everybody should be having. Information out of China, whether it be stocks or news or how they are dealing with COVID and their economic growth, all of that stuff, you've got to look at it with a grain of salt. But the recovery from the COVID low in China seems to be moving very quickly. The rebuilding of their herd and westernization of their breeding facilities, their farrowing facilities, finishing facilities, all of that, and specifically the rations, the feed rations. I think it's all very important as we get into 2021, because it's going to be an education process for those finishing hogs in China to understand exactly, you know, that it does take 9 bushels of corn and it does take about 125 pounds of soybean meal to take a pig from that weanling to a market hog. You do that with the numbers that they're dealing with, that 10 billion, 11 billion bushel corn crop that they've got doesn't really do the job. They're going to figure out that their self-sufficiency ideas, when you're dealing with 1.4, 1.5 billion people, their ideas of self-sufficiency are going to need some adjustment when it comes to feeding that many hogs. And it's going to turn into a market force now, or a better market force. Now, if for some reason that gets waylaid, that would be one of the things, obviously, that we're going to look at and say, geez, if China does produce 14, 15 billion bushels of corn in the year ahead, or figures out some way to significantly increase their output, and instead of China buying corn from the U.S., they're going to be producing it, that would be a big red flag for this corn market for the year ahead. There's no question about it. The acreage battle, if cotton doesn't engage, if spring wheat doesn't engage in an acreage battle, and it's very easy to move to increase our bean plantings by 6, 7, 8 million acres over a year ago, it's easy to increase corn acres 3 million over a year ago, and instead of looking at a combined 181, 182 million, we're looking at a combined 184, 185 million acres of corn and soybeans for next year. That, I think, would very quickly take some of the steam out of it too. So you got to have cotton engage in the acreage battle. You got to have spring wheat engage in the acreage battle. Make it tough on corn and soybeans to get those acres out of the south and out of the far northern areas. If corn and if cotton and spring wheat don't engage, you're going to want to step up your selling pretty aggressively.
So, Chip, we're winding up here our conversation. There's a multitude of places we could go, but what things are on your mind that we haven't talked about, the big things that you think about in 2021 that we should be aware of as we head into the new year?
How much of an influence are regulatory rollbacks under a Biden administration? How much of an impact is that going to have on your business? Climate change, carbon, those kinds of things. How much progress do we make on figuring out how much carbon is worth and how to compensate producers for carbon sequestration? How much progress do we make on that in the year ahead? Currency issues, the dollar's heading south against the European currencies specifically, but how much are we really gaining in competitiveness, and how much is it really helping the price when corn and soybean prices, when you look at what's happening with the Brazilian real and the Russian ruble? The influence of the dollar may be over exaggerated right now. And back to the climate and the carbon, you've heard it, Andrew. Joe Biden has said many times that climate change and battling climate change is going to be a top priority at all the agencies. That includes USDA. So how is that going to influence how we do business in the year ahead? And how is that going to influence the next farm bill that's going to be written here in the next couple of years? So, man, oh, man, there are so many things that we are going to be watching very closely in the year ahead. From a business perspective, from a marketing perspective, get what you got to have. And when you got that return, find a way to capture it, but maintain some flexibility that will allow for this demand-driven market to continue.
Before we wind up, you mentioned something, and I've just got to jump over to it because you brought it up about, you know, carbon and the environment and so forth. I think all of us, and in fact, the podcast right before this one, we talked about, you know, carbon credits and carbon market and so forth. You know, in agriculture, change is sometimes difficult for us, and we hear these things, and I think rightfully so. We have concerns sometimes about, okay, what's this mean for myself and my operation? Is there a chance, though, that perhaps those changes increase ethanol markets? It perhaps spurs a market for carbon credits, and we can make money that way? Yeah. I mean, there's so many factors, but how do you view it right now?
Yeah. Yeah. Agriculture is slow to change unless there's money to be made in the change. If there's money to be made in the change, the adoption of technology is pretty quick in agriculture. So you show us a way to increase revenues and to turn those revenues into profits, and agriculture will jump on this battle climate change effort in a hurry. But there's got to be some money in the bank account tied to it somehow, some way. So I think they'll jump on it. Ethanol. John Linder's the president of NCGA. I did a kind of an ethanol town hall meeting with him and Emily Score from Growth Energy here a while ago, Andrew, and you know, we were John made the comment that corn's next ethanol could be ethanol. And as you go from E10 to E15, and then all of a sudden we start talking about the environmental benefits of going from an E15 to an E30, the higher blends, allowing the consumer to believe that it's their idea to use a higher blend of ethanol rather than having E10 forced down their throat through a market access. I know that's tough, but if you allow that consumer to believe that it is their choice to use a higher blend because it's what they want to do, corn's next ethanol could be ethanol. And I think there's plenty of time for that to happen before we get to the EVs, the electric vehicles. I think there's a lot of time for that to happen. And ethanol, can still be a very much of a bright spot for agriculture in over the next 10 years.
Chip, I always enjoy the chance to visit. There's so many more topics we could hit, but I know we're running out of time, but appreciate the conversation and hope you've had a good holiday season. Looking forward here to the new year.
Yeah, absolutely. I am. Happy New Year to you, Andrew.
So no doubt there are opportunities right now. My break-even prices are posted on the bulletin board next to where I produce these broadcasts. I think a lot of us like the numbers we see. It's just figuring out the best way to take full advantage of the opportunity. Hopefully our conversation has provided you some ideas to do just that. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you next time on Farming the Countryside. The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for. The nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com.